Welcome to the Finclusive Podcast, where we believe investing in diversity is not just good for society, but a competitive advantage that impact and return are not mutually exclusive. We talk with underestimated founders and funders on how they're creating new markets around the world. Yay! Thank you so much, Arlen, that you're on our podcast. Arlen Hamilton, who is the founding managing director of Backstage Capital and Backstage Studio and probably a bunch of other things that I don't even know. Welcome. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So I'm going to let actually Lauren ask the first question.
So I know you've just come off of a series of online podcast interviews, but I don't know if anyone's asked you, because I think you have a very unique sort of like rock star personality.
Do I? That's the first time I think I've heard that, but I appreciate you.
What is the weirdest thing about you that
The weirdest thing about me?
Yes.
What is the weirdest thing about me? Maybe a different word, like not weird, because I don't know what's weird about me. I guess I would think if I thought it was weird, I wouldn't do it probably.
Maybe, you know, since you've been, you know, in the music industry for quite some time, how has that influenced your time as an investor?
Yeah, so I worked as a production coordinator and a road manager and tour manager for several artists, from indie musicians to arena level musicians over more than a decade. And all of it was very much so behind the scenes and very like a lot of work and not glamorous for the most part. But what it did was help me. It was exciting and thrilling, and I loved most of it. And it helped me really understand how to work with so many different types of people at once in a moving situation. So it was like the best boot camp you could ever have for going into tech and venture, where there's so many personality types, there's so many egos, there's so many people with agendas, and then there are so many people who are just very talented and just want to do the work and just want to, you know, craft something for others to use. And figuring out what people's motives may be or how to diffuse a situation and do all of that while you're in a fast-paced environment, you can't get a better education than being on the road, in my opinion, the way that I was. Obviously, I think maybe the better education is probably being in the military, but it's the second, it's like the second, you know, list to that. So I learned quite a bit about divas and devos, and usually it's the people who have, there are people who are the highest maintenance are the people who just have like, you know, a certain, they don't have a lot of power. So they're trying to wield power in a certain way and make a certain noise that is just annoyance at some point.
So I think we've all heard about the green MMMs, but how do you determine, you know, is this a legitimate quirk about them or if it's a... something they're trying to hide behind?
So you're talking about musicians or founders? Because the green M&Ms, you're talking about people who have like very specific demands. And it's funny because I've definitely seen a lot of weird demands from people, or, you know, that they need. And some of it is just outrageous, like, you know, drugs and women and this and that. And some of it, though, is just, it's funny or silly because they just need something that's comforting to them because they're about to go out in front of 20,000 people and you kind of have to have that thing you go to. So some of it's very like innocent and cute rather than that. But yeah, I mean, it's not really my place to judge it. If I'm working for an artist, it's not my place to judge what they need. I just had a very specific, everybody knew my stance, who I worked with. And I said, what I will not do is I will not procure drugs for people. And I will not be someone who gets you women, you know, as a pastime. I won't do that. So for some of the artists that I worked with, that was like a non-starter, you know, because that's all I wanted. But that was just like, I'm not going to judge you, but I'm not going to be the person who goes and gets that for you. So I just made that determination in that way.
I actually have a question when you were talking about how working in the entertainment industry and all of that. And I remember one of the interviews, you said that a lot of people think like Ireland is overhyped. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've seen something different, right? So, but I want to hear what you have to say about that right now, like with all the accomplishment that you've had. How do you feel, and what do you want to respond to that?
Maybe people are right that I'm overhyped. I don't know. It's their determination. But I do understand what I bring to the table and what I've accomplished, what I do on a daily basis that no one knows about or only a few people know about, and what I've done that everybody knows about. So I'm not going to shrink myself to make other people feel comfortable because they think, oh, I don't deserve something, because I wake up every single day of my life figuring out how can I help catalyze other people? How can I have a good life for myself? And how can I help catalyze other people to have a good life? And I don't have, I just saw this reel on Instagram of Denzel Washington like 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago. And they were saying, you know, what do you think about what people think of you? And he was just like, I don't have time to worry too much about what people think of me because I'm doing the work, you know? So if someone thinks I'm overhyped, that is absolutely their opinion to have, and I'm not going to try to argue with them about it. If they think I'm overhyped, okay. What usually happens is that people who think that meet me or talk to me for more than 5 minutes, and then they sort of can't help but to understand what's really going on.
On a related note, since we're talking a lot about people understanding motivations and whatnot, obviously one of the biggest challenges we face as investors is understanding if someone has the willpower, the determination, the grit to carry on to their journey, their destination. What are some particular signals that you have found to be helpful that you can share?
You're not going to know immediately, although I have a pretty great some pretty great stats, you know, based on what I thought in the first 15 minutes versus what has happened over the years. But you're never going to truly know until you get in it with the person and really spend some time, months and years with a person. So the initial things that I go by are, how are they treating, like, what did they come prepared for in this meeting or in this, you know, the first few times we talk to each other? Do they know their company, their industry, all of the information that they need to know, in my opinion? Do they know that back and forth? Because that then tells me, like, that's a good signal of they really care about this. Because there are some founders who they just think, if I build this thing, I will become rich. And it's the easiest path from A to Z. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that I am not attracted to that as an investor. So I have to be, so I look for those types of signals as, you know, if they don't know as much about the industry, it's usually like it was just something that kind of they stumbled upon and they're just trying to figure out, and it doesn't have that really deep-seated meaning to them. So I look at how they describe and how they talk about a company. I see what they've done. It doesn't have to do anything. It doesn't have to be associated with what the company is. But I look at what have they done? Like, what have they worked on in the past, and what makes it, you know, what signals can I get from that? And just, sometimes you can just tell if people are kind, and I don't need a person to be outgoing. I don't need them to be charming. I don't need any of that. I just need them to be, because a lot of introverted people are not necessarily those two things at first. And I think sometimes they get sort of ignored or dismissed because they don't have this big personality or this big sort of even big story to tell, this big narrative. And so I try to be very careful not to count someone out if they have a personality quirk that I don't necessarily jive with. Mm-hmm. And I make sure, oh, sorry?
No, to that note, like, I know you do that very, I don't know, I feel like you do that very well, and there's a lot of testimonials, actually, of founders saying how awesome you are. So, but now you're at a different space, at a different sort of echelon, like, you have more VCs going to you, emerging funders going to you. How are you going to scale that?
Well, I mean, I still do exactly what I did 5 years ago. I did what I did 7 years ago when I didn't have any money. And that is, when I'm looking at companies, I'm talking to them. I'm having a lot of conversations with them. So I don't think any of that has changed. There are a lot more people who apply and people who want investment that I just won't get to meet. But when I am talking to someone, I am doing the same process. So I think it scales naturally. I think it organically scales because it has to. Like, it's not, if we have 100 people that we go through or 5,000 that we go through, I'm still probably going to see the same amount of people, which is, I'd rather it be that way than we see more people, we invest in more people, and we didn't really give it a good look. You know, I don't need it. I don't need a vanity metric of how many companies we've invested in badly enough or at all to that, so that we kind of sacrifice the quality of that one-on-one and figuring out. And we have, not only do I talk to companies, but the team talks to companies every single day. Right now, there are three people right now on phone calls with different companies. Chacho, Christy, and Brittany are in conversation with two or three other founders. And we all go through this sort of loop with each other. So I think that the scale happens outside of me, right? It happens outside of it. But when I'm with somebody, I'm with them.
Shifting gears a little, I'm very curious to see, you know, what are some of your favorite trends or theses that you're tracking, especially emerging ones?
Yeah, people ask me about trends. It's just I don't keep up with trends, so I wouldn't be able to tell you that. I don't know what's hot right now or what's trendy right now. I know that we're still agnostic at Backstage, and it's still working really well for us. So it's very exciting to see all types of things. That's like our, like, the variety is really exciting to us. But the older I get, the more focused I get on people who are building really big and bold ideas, as opposed to things that are not necessarily, that are just sort of like the ninth iteration of something else. And that is simply a numbers game, because I only have so many more years. And when you get middle age, you realize that. You only have so many more years, you're looking at the other side of it, and you're like, well, how can I live the fullest possible? And in my view, doing so through other people building big, you know, interesting things, even if it doesn't work out, is how you do that, is one of the ways you do that. So I just had a podcast episode on my podcast called Your First Million. I just had an episode with a woman named Abby Levy, who has a $50 million fund for companies who are addressing this, and or founders who are 60 plus. And that's all they do. And it's just, that has been very exciting to me for that past couple of years, is how do we not only help with the quality of life for someone 60 plus, 60 to 120, but how do we look at what their entrepreneurship could look like at those ages?
I love it, because that's also diversity. I remember, I guess I brought this up a few times, that I remember a guy actually said, like, I'm ageist. I don't invest in anyone over 40. And I know you're 40.
Oh, and he said out loud, and he knew people could hear.
He said that out loud, yes, on stage in Clubhouse.
He said on Clubhouse?
Yes.
Was he like an investor?
I don't want to give more description, but
no, yeah. I don't want to know him. I just can't believe that. That's so stupid. That is really short-sighted.
But I think I mentioned that last time, and someone said the best entrepreneurs or something, but with the biggest return on actually like 43 years old or some number like that. So I'm like, come on.
When I think about that, I honestly don't think about it for myself. Like I'm honestly not doing it because I'm now going towards that age, so I'm thinking about it more. I was talking about this years ago, right? It's I simply have a reverence for older people that I don't know. It's different cultures have that more than others, and I've just been surrounded by people who just really dismiss people if they're 60 plus. They're not thinking about them.
Okay, I think Lauren has a deal to send you later.
Okay. Okay, I'll check it out.
We'll take that one offline.
Okay.
But we're definitely tracking the silver tech space as a very underserved market. I think that's especially bridging the digital analog divide. Definitely a lot of opportunities. As a consumer, as a caregiver, and also as an investor. So you've probably been asked this question many, many times, but it does resonate very personally with us, given we relate very strongly to this space. As a LGBT investor, how have you seen the space evolve over the last few years?
In that lane, not by much. And I have to be honest, I've been very focused. So I invest in people who are women across the board, people of color across the board, or LGBTQ or any combination. And that's what I identify as. And for the last 4 years, the conversation has mainly been about women first, 2016, 17, 18, and now Black founders and other people of color second, and second in line, not necessarily second, on the rung, but second chronologically. And so because it's all of it is urgent. All of it is important. Every minute of it is important. But I just know that the kind of the public movements haven't been as much around LGBTQ. So it hasn't been as much in our public eye. We've made great investments in a few companies, and we definitely talk internally about wanting to do more and needing to do more of that space. And then generally, I don't know. It's not that it's gotten worse necessarily, which is a good thing, but it just has been sort of in the shadows. It's not as talked about, and it will be. Like just when the Me Too movement happened, I said, I think on Twitter or somewhere, interview, I said, wait a second, just wait a minute. You're going to see the same thing happen with Black founders. We're going to be able to tell our stories pretty soon. And sure enough, here we are. So I think the next wave will be other underrepresented cultures and races, and then it will be LGBTQ. And those of us who are all intersectional, there's we got to put our hat on every morning, clock in. Like, okay, what are we going to talk about today about our identity? What are we going to preserve today?
There was a VC that mentioned how, with all these like awareness of talking about diversity, and he was saying that if there is two equal people, and he would definitely choose the Black female.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't see something that's equal. I had a response to him on that. I was wondering what your response.
So if he saw two people and the other was
two founders with the same credential, then he would definitely invest into Black female. But he hasn't seen that.
Where are you hanging out, Kelly? I have to talk. Bring me with you in these conversations. Can you tell me what his profile is?
He's a white male.
And he said this out loud where people can hear too?
Yes. We educated him a bit, but
I want
you to say something.
He said, now I even have to go, but I have to sit for this. He said that if he had two people side by side and they had the same credentials and the Black woman, and they, oh, woo!
He said he's just not seeing them. I mean,
he's just not seeing them.
But I had
so offensive.
I want to hear yours.
It's so offensive. Oh, I bet he is the most mediocre man known to man. That is so offensive and silly. And so silly. I can't even. I hope I never talk to him. If you know that I talk to him, please put him on my radar because I can't. Please, if you're listening to this and you are a white man and you think anywhere close to that, come Arlen@backstagecapital.com. Okay? We can't have that out there. That's ridiculous. Okay, that's what I think about it.
If you had more time, what would you be doing?
If I had more time, I would be doing more, a lot more of what I'm doing now. So just more. I'll be doing more of this and I guess cloning. Can we add cloning to it? I'd also just, one of me would be at the beach all the time, just sitting in my jeans and just looking at the waves.
All right, your favorite book, other than yours.
Oh, other than mine.
You can plug your books here too. I cry seriously like 5 times.
Oh, thank you. It's about damn time is the name of the book. Appreciate you and thank you for reading it. I don't have a favorite book, but I love What I Know for Sure by Oprah. Very, very helpful book at different stages of my life. I'll leave it at that just because one book and I have to go.
Thank you, Arlen. It was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Great questions. I'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.